Așa. Gnanjana shlakaya chakshur unmeritam yena tasmai shigarve namaha. So, basically, this Krishna is extremely important in our body of Vaishnava. The reason why it's extremely important is Vedanta Acharya. Now, it's interesting. Let's talk about the Vedanta. There's actually called the Vedanta Sutras, are also called the Brahma Sutras. And let's give the whole history of the Vedic literatures. Of course, originally you have the four Vedic literatures, Yajurveda, Atharva Veda, Samaveda, and Rig Veda, that are mainly dealing with sacrifices. And after the four Vedas, you get the other literatures, the Brahman literatures, and the Aranyakas. Brahman means basically discourses between the different Brahmanas about philosophical matters, and then Aranyaka means like the forest literatures, those who headed for the hills because they were too fed up with the Brahmanas' ritualistic activity, especially the animal killing and stuff like that. Then it's called the Aranyakas. And then after that, you have the Upanishads. Upanishad means that which brings you closer, specifically referring to the spiritual master, because the Upanishads are written in such a way that one requires a guru in order to understand the Upanishads. It brings you closer to Krishna, brings you closer to the spiritual master. And then after the Upanishads, of course, we have the other literatures, like the Puranas, and then the Puranas, Itihasas. Itihasa means history. Itihasa, history, is like the Mahabharata. That's one of the historical literatures. Puranas, of course, there's 18 Mahapuranas, six in the mode of goodness, six in the mode of passion, six in the mode of ignorance. They're not in it, but they're four people in the mode of modes of different nature, modes of nature. Anyway, so then after the Puranas, after the Itihasas, then you actually have what's called the Vedanta Sutra. And the Vedanta Sutra actually means thread. Just like Krishna says in the Gita, Sutra Mani Gana Iva, that everything is resting upon me, just like pearls are strung upon a what? Just to make sure you're listening. A thread. And just like you don't see the thread, let's say if you have like neck beads or something like that, and they're strung real tightly, you don't see the thread or the nylon thread underneath the neck beads, unless they're strung very loosely. But you know they're there, because if they weren't there, if the thread wasn't there, then all the neck beads would not be strung. You know, they'd be all over the place. They'd just be individual beads. So you can actually ascertain the existence of Krishna by seeing how everything is functioning very, very nicely. So in any case, like this, Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, that means it ties everything in together. And they're also written in codes. Codes mean very short statements that require the guidance of a spiritual master to understand. Just like the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Gigyasya. Famous verse, actually. Now is the time to look for Brahman, or to get knowledge of Brahman. And so, unless one really has the guidance of a spiritual master, you're not going to know where to look or what to do to get knowledge of Brahman. And then another famous verse, which is also in the Bhagavatam, Janma Jasya Yataha. That the absolute truth is that from which everything comes. And this is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra. And another statement is Shastra Yonitva, that the absolute truth can be understood through Shastra. So these are all different statements. Of course, we know that there's many Shastras, like the original Vedic literatures, the Upanishads and everything like that. So how are you going to understand any of these things without a spiritual master? So the Vedanta Sutra also is a commentary. Each and every verse of the Vedanta Sutra can be correlated with specific Upanishad verses. So it's like a commentary on the Upanishads, which is really interesting. So most of you have never read the Vedanta Sutra, anyway. And then, each and every, getting to the point of Baladeva Vibhushana, each and every sampradaya to be considered bona fide, or to be considered that you're a bona fide representative of the Vedanta, of the Vedic literature, or the sampradaya, you have to have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And so, for example, in the Sri of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they have the called Sri Bhasha, which is written by Sripad Ramanujacharya. That's a Lakshmi Sampradaya. So anyway, so each and every Sampradaya has a commentary. And of course, in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, which we're members of, the commentary is actually considered to be Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra for us. But that is not accepted by other members, many other members of other sampradayas. They say, you know, where is a specific Gaudiya commentary? We're not talking about Srimad Bhagavatam, which is for everybody, but the specific Gaudiya commentary. So this is a little history that will help us understand better about Baladeva Vidyabhushana's pastimes. Okay, so Baladeva Vidyabhushana was actually initiated in our sampradaya, but he was initiated as a tattvavada, as a follower of Madhvacharya. So the tattvavada followers of Madhvacharya have a little bit of different take on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness than we have, even though we're members of the same sampradaya, which is quite interesting. I mean, one understanding they have is that a soul is eternally conditioned or eternally liberated or eternally evil, and that's your eternal position. Another understanding they have is that the demigods are the best devotees. For example, in the commentary, of Madhvacharya's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, he doesn't deal with the Brahma Vimohana Leela. Brahma Vimohana Leela is the Leela in which Brahma gets bewildered and steals the calves and coward boys, you know, because he doesn't want to think that Brahma is bewildered. Obviously, Krishna says, of course, Muyanti Yat Surya, even the demigods are bewildered. I mean, even Krishna, is by his yogamaya potency, he's bewildering Balaram. You know, what to speak of Lord Brahma, and Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's no question of someone not, even Krishna himself gets bewildered by his illusory potency. Just like when Krishna's coward boyfriends marched into the mouth of the Agasura demon. Actually, Aga means sin. So it's the sin, it's a sin demon, which is really interesting. Aga, aga means sin in Sanskrit. So the sin demon. Anyway, he marched into the mouth of the sin demon, like Sinbad. Anyway, same thing. So anyway, so he marched into the mouth, they marched into the mouth of the sin demon. Then Krishna was just like bewildered, you know, what am I going to do? You know, my friends have all marched into the mouth. And then later on, a few minutes later, he realized, well, I'm God. I guess I could do something about it. And so he also marched into the mouth, expanded himself, choked up the demon, and the demon's life air popped out of the top of his head. I don't know if serpents have heads, but the top of the part of his body, which is considered to be the head. Anyway, they just have one body. They don't really have a head. They have a head of the serpent, but it's not the same thing as us. So, anyway, so even Krishna gets bewildered. But the Madhvacharya followers, the Tattvavadis, they really can't deal with this particular thing, you know, how Lord Brahma is being bewildered. And they consider the demigods to actually be the best devotees. And they're great devotees, of course, of Hanuman, because Madhvacharya is the brother of Hanuman. So obviously, you know, family attachment is there, even in the spiritual realm. So, anyway, so this is the point. So he was born in a place called Baleshvara. Actually, Baleshvara is sometimes called nowadays the village of Balasore, which is actually right next to the village of Ramuna. We've been there. And everybody remembers what happened in Ramona? What's there in Ramona? What? Yeah, Shirachora Gopinath. Shirachora Gopinath's there. The deity is there in Ramuda. So he was born in the early part of the 18th century. That means the 1700s, for those of you who don't know what that means. Like when we had the 20th century, that was the 1900s, which we just came out of. Now we're in the new epoch. So, and he was a son of Vaishya, incidentally. He was not born in a Brahmin family, which is really interesting. So when he was young, he was educated in all the things that Vaishnavacharyas are educated in, like grammar, poetry, rhetoric, logic. And he became very expert in the Tattvavada Siddhanta, that is the teachings of Shripad Madhvacharya. Then he traveled and preached, came to Jagannath Puri, and he met a great disciple of Rasikananda Dev, of course. Rasikananda is a disciple of Shyamananda. And so this disciple is named Sri Radha Damodar, and he discussed devotional principles with him in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, and he became so convinced that he accepted initiation into the Radha Krishna mantra. Also, this shows that even if one is initiated into a different sampradaya, one can take initiation in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And we explain it sometimes to some of our Indian members. They say, well, I have this initiation, my guru initiated me. And I said, that's all right. You don't have to reject your guru. But we're initiating you into specific mantra, the Radha Krishna mantra, because that's what initiation means. Initiation basically means to get the mantra. And if you haven't gotten the mantra, a specific mantra from a specific guru, then you can get it from a guru. It's not reinitiation at that point. Reinitiation means to take the same mantra again. Everybody understands that? So even though he was initiated, in fact, he was a sannyasi, what to speak of initiated, he accepted initiation in the Radha Krishna mantra, and he became very expert studying with Radha Damodar Goswami. And then he was sent to Vrindavan to study with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Of course, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is so famous in our sampradaya. And Prabhupada actually consulted Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam and other literatures, like the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada was putting together his Bhaktivedanta purports. And then Baladeva Vidyabhushana became very expert in the Achincha Beda philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then something happened that required his urgent assistance. In Jayapur, there was a royal court, and the deity of Govinda was being worshipped there. The reason the deity of Govinda, actually Radha Govinda, was being worshipped there was the deity was taken out of Vrindavan because the Muslims attacked. And so it was the Gaudiya devotees who were worshipping the deity of Govinda, but there were Ramanandis. Actually, here the story is told wrong. It's not members of the Ramanuja Sampradaya. It's Ramanandis, which is different from Ramanuja Sampradaya. Because Ramanuja Sampradaya does accept that the Lord is worshipped always with his consort. It's like if you go to the temple here, the South Indian temple, you'll see Sri Boo and Boo Devi, like that, Lakshmi, being worshipped with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no question. Of course, and even they understand, when I went there, they pointed out, yeah, this is the same as Radha. You know, of course, they think, you know, a little bit different than we do. They think that that Radha is an expansion of Sri and Boo. Whereas we understand exactly the opposite. And they think, anyway, so this is all right. This is all right. Whether they think expansion, they're all the same at the way to Chuta Nadi, Ranantam, Rupam, Ajim, Puranam, Purusham, Navyovadam, Cha. But the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us, Sete Changsa, Kalakpumsa, Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original. That's all right. But as long as they worship, we're not going to go and smash them because we're not like, you know, different groups of Muslims who worship different saints and kill each other because they worship different saints. I mean, Hare Krishna. Anyway. Actually, the history of India is such that there was never any violence between the different religious sects until the Muslims came. even though there were so many different sects, there was Buddhism, which, you know, has nothing to do with religion, we hate to tell you. There was Buddhism, and there was Jainism. There were different varieties of interpretation. There were Shaktas, you know, worship the energy of the Lord. There were Shaivites, there were Vaishnavites. I mean, there was a whole potpourri, you know, any smorgasbord, of different sects, but none of them fought each other. There was actually openness. The Megasthenes, the Greek ambassador, went to India, and he was so surprised. I mean, this is around the, you know, like the 6th or 7th century A.D., and he was so surprised. He said, look, one can go from every corner, one corner of India to another, and not be harassed by dacoits. It's a little different now. Now you get harassed by dacoits, even in the temples. So not be harassed by dacoits. And there's freedom of speech. One can even speak against the leader, you know, the king or the emperor. Can you imagine? It's the only country in the world that had that freedom of speech at that time. That one could literally speak against the emperor, like the Emperor Ashoka, and not be imprisoned. And one can have different religions. So there was actually complete freedom to discuss philosophy, and there wasn't any violence between different religious sects until the good old Muslims came. And then, I mean, I'm not going to give the history. There was so much violence at that particular point. So anyway, so they had philosophical discussions. So here the Ramanandis, they didn't actually understand that the Lord is worshipped with his energies. They thought, you know, you just got to worship God. It's like that picture that we sometimes see of Krishna sitting in an om in outer space. You know, the Indians like to see that picture. You know, some devotees have a t-shirt with that picture on. Well, got news for you, Prabhupada said, Krishna's never like that. He's always with his associates, particularly his energies. Parasya Shakti Rivadaiva Shuyate Swabhavaki Jnana Balakriya Cha. So, anyway, so then the Ramanandis, they said, look, these Gaudiyas, they have no commentary. So let's take this Radharani. What is she doing on the altar with Govindaji? And so they took her and said, well, worship her. But, you know, they took her like some distance away in the palace. Because the Govinda temple, Govindaji temple, is right there on the palace grounds. It's a really nice place in Jaipur. Everything is centered upon the Govindaji temple, and most people go and see Govinda before they go to work in the morning. Not like here, not like that most people should come and see Radha Golokananda, but they don't. I mean, if I was living right here, I would actually get their blessings. I'd be afraid to go to work without getting their blessings. But anyway, that's life. That's our cult, wonderful culture in America. So anyway, getting on with the story is that, so they separated the deities and they said, well, this is, Gaudiya Sampradaya is not a bona fide Sampradaya. We're bona fide. And so, therefore, there's an emergency. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was quite old at that time and he couldn't go from Vrindavan to Jaipur. And even by taxi nowadays, it's a five-hour ride, and it's a hellish ride. I don't know if anyone's taken a taxi from between Vrindavan and Jaipur, but to speak of the bus ride. But then they'd have to go by ox cart, which is even more hellish. I don't know if you've ever been on an ox cart, but if you, you know, five-hour taxi ride would translate into probably a several-day ox cart ride. You know, bouncing around, you know, phew. Like they wanted, like Prabhupada wanted to go on an ox cart around Govardhan, and the devotees pleaded with him not to go because if he had went at that particular time, you know, he would have left his body from the bouncing. Anyway, so then Baladeva Vijabhushana was sent in stead of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so Baladeva argued, and he won the debate. And everyone was going, jai, jai, jai. And he convinced everybody at that time that the Srimad Bhagavatam was Bhashyam Brahma Sutram. That is the commentary. Bhashya means commentary on the Brahma Sutra, natural commentary. So the pundits thought about this for about 10 seconds. And they said, look, he's admitting that he has no commentary. In other words, he won the debate. But they just were very slippery pundits. They were just looking for some excuse. So they need a special Gaudiya. It has to say Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary on the title. They said, ha, doesn't say it. Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't say it. So Baladeva Vijayabhushana thought for a few seconds, and he said, well, I'll show you our commentary with our label on it within a few days. And the pandit said, sure, let's see, And so Baladeva Vijayabhushana did what devotees do when they're in distress, is they go to Krishna. Not that they go on the internet or anything like that. They go to Krishna. He didn't go hire a pandit, like that. He went to Krishna and he began to pray to Krishna. And the deity said, I will dictate the commentary. And don't worry, nobody will be able to find any fault in it. And you should compose it. So this commentary was composed within a few days, like a week or something like that. A whole commentary. I mean, usually this takes years for an acharya to do. I mean, because, Sanskrit, these commentaries are not just like prose type of things. You know, when we write some commentary, it's prose. Prose means the just simple writing, not poetry. Poetry means it has to rhyme, it has to be in a certain meter. So to write a whole commentary is very difficult. Just like if you look at the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, generally, except for parts of the fifth canto, it's in a specific meter. And it's, it's poetry. Can you imagine, 18,000 verses of poetry? I mean, that's pretty good. And people say, the people from Europe said originally this was composed by very primitive people. Well, Hare Krishna, sophisticated philosophy in poetry, 18,000 verses, what to speak of the other Puranas, like the Padma Purana and the other Puranas, which are actually larger than the Srimad Bhagavatam. And, what to speak of the original four Vedas, which are very large. Anyway, so what happened is he came up with the commentary. And he gave credit to Govindaji as the author. He said, this is actually interesting. Vidyarupam busham ye pradaya katam nitye teno yo mamudara shi govinda swapna nirdishta vashe radha bandhu ranga sajiyat. May Govinda be all glorious by his mercy. He revealed this commentary to me in a dream. The commentary revealed by him is especially appreciated by the highly learned, and as a result of this, I have been given the name Vidyabhushana. Vidyabhushan means like ornament, and Vidya means learning or intelligence or knowledge or something like that. So it means that his ornament is knowledge, which is really nice. That's a wonderful name. But it is Sri Govinda who deserves all the credit. May that Sri Govinda, who is the most dear life and soul, Sri Radhika, be all victorious. Just like when someone composes a book, they give credit to different people. Mundane books, they say, I give credit to my wife, Julie, who without who I would have never been able to, without whose approval and fanning me every night, I would never have been able to complete this book. So he's giving credit to Govindaji. So then he went to the assembly and he said, look, here's our commentary and let me read it. And the pandits go, They fainted. And the pandits appreciated that they were the ones who gave him the name Vidyabhushana. And then Radha was connected again with Krishna, was put on the same altar. Of course, some of the acharyas explain this as being a pastime between Radha and Krishna, that Radharani got very angry at Krishna and she just ran away. And so the pandits were actually just instruments in the hands of Radharani. She didn't want to see Krishna, which happens sometimes in the Vrindavan pastimes. But Radha is never separated from Krishna. This is simply a pastime. So then Baladeva Vijayabhushana went back to Vrindavan and he was received by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, very much respected. And let's see what other things. And there's many things here about Baladeva Vijayabhushana. We don't have time to read right now. And he wrote many commentaries on different literatures, including the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada also consulted his particular commentary. It was Baladeva Vijayabhushana who elaborated on the five categories that are in the Bhagavad Gita that we know of. Who knows the five categories? Nobody knows the five categories the Bhagavad Gita talks about? No? Okay. God, that's an easy one. The jiva, that's an easy one. Material energy, time, and what else? Karma. Those are the five topics. So he was the one who actually elaborated on those five topics, and Prabhupada cited Baladeva Vidyabhushana when he wrote his Bhaktivedanta commentary on the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Let's see. Anything else? Here's a list of his books. This commentary in the Vedanta, which you mentioned before, is called the Govinda Bhasha. Then he wrote a summary of Vedanta philosophy known as the Vedanta Simantaka, that means the jewel of the Vedanta. And he outlines the principles of the Madhvacharya schools and Chaitanya schools. In another book called the Prameya Ratnavali, the Siddhanta Dharpana, summary of Gaudiya Vaishnava principles, Kavya Kostuba, it's a book of selected Sanskrit verses, Aishvarya Kadambani, the Vyakarana Kamudi, that's a book on grammar, Padakastuba, that's prayers, commentaries on important Upanishads, beginning with the Isha Upanishad, which Prabhupada also commented on. You can see how Prabhupada was actually a follower of Baladeva Vidyabhushana, because that was the first commentary that Baladeva Vidyabhushana wrote on the Upanishads, was the Isha Upanishad. The Isha Upanishad is also contained within the original Vedas. It's the only Upanishad contained. A commentary in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, a Bhagavad Gita commentary, which we mentioned before, commentary on the Vishnu Sahasranam, that means the thousand names of Lord Vishnu, commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, which Prabhupada also consulted, commentary on Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha, which is really important. The Sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, which the BBT under Gopi Pranada and Prabhu are working on right now. Very important work. Rupa Goswami's Stavamala, Nata Chandrika, that means dance. Jayadeva Goswami's Chandraloka, and in other books like the Sahitya Kamudi, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Nataka Chandrika. We mentioned that. Oh no, there's another one. Nataka Chandrika and Nata Chandrika, and the Shamananda Shataka. And he disappeared from this world in the Christian year, or the Jewish year, 1768. No, it's not the Jewish year, 1768. Jewish year would be like 4,800 and something like that. Because Jewish year began roughly 5,000 years ago in the beginning. Kali Yuga. Anyway, that's another story. And they go by moon cycles, too. Isn't it interesting? It begins like the beginning of Kali Yuga. Because I remember when I was young, I was a member of that particular religion. And you talk about like the year, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, something like that. Anyway, so began after Krishna left for his abode. So anyway, so that's the story of Baladeva Vidyabhushana. A few words about Gangamata Goswamini. She was actually the daughter of a king in Bengal, and she was originally called Sachi. And her mother and father were complete anxiety. Why are mother and father in complete anxiety? Just like when you have a daughter in the Vedic system, you're always in anxiety to get them what? Married. It's like always anxiety. Like Prabhupada said, you know, his wife threatened to commit suicide because their daughter wasn't married at an early age. You know, so it's just like, whew. I mean, there's many heavy statements in the Vedic literatures. That's why nowadays they try to avoid having daughters through nefarious means because they consider the daughter or the girl to be something that's like a deficit in the society or it's not unwanted. That's why they have like elective abortions when they discover it's a girl child. But actually, in India, the ultrasound people, they tour around now in trucks because it's illegal to actually have an ultrasound with the idea of discovering what sex your child is in India, because people, the government knows it's going to be used to abort female fetuses. So people now, they have ultrasound, it's like a whole underground economy ultrasound people in trucks, you know, they test, go to the villages and test, and then they arrange for abortions. Hellish, isn't it? And now, of course, many more men than women are actually being born in India, so the men are having trouble finding wives. So those of you who want to find a husband, you know where to go. So anyway, so her parents wanted to arrange a marriage, Sachi's parents, and she said, yuck. Because from her very birth, she had been studying the Shastras, and she was very educated, Sanskrit, poetics, and grammar, and she, every time they came up with a candidate, she said, yuck. You know, how does he compare to Krishna? So they kept trying and trying and trying. Finally, they died. Not because they were trying, but just because they got old. Finally, they died. And she never did get married. But because they died and her parents were the king and queen, she took over. She became the queen. And she took on all the responsibilities of the kingdom, but she didn't like it very much. So she told them, well, let me go on pilgrimage for a few days. And then she went on pilgrimage and never came back. She wanted to find a spiritual master. You know, she just like an excuse. It's like Prabhupada said, he played a transcendental trick on his family. He left one day and never came back. So it's the same. We find this in many, even Lord Chaitanya, you know, he just like in the middle of the night, he just swam across the river, isn't it? And took sannyas. Of course, he told his family what he was going to do beforehand. They were crying. So anyway, so she went to Jagannath Puri, found a spiritual master, Haridas Pandit, a very, very great devotee. And he was in the disciplic succession coming down from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So, you know, bona fide Gaudiya disciplic succession. And then he tested her. He said, actually, you know, you want to take initiation, become a disciple? No, it's not possible. Just go back to your castle. Stay at home. It's better that than going to Vrindavan. You know, you're just accustomed to like soft beds and nice facility and organic vegetables. So, you know, at that time everything was organic anyway. So he said, go back home. And she understood this was a test of her spiritual master. So she didn't pay attention to the words of her guru. And with determination, she went to practice her bhajan. So she gave up everything, was dressed in rags, and actually was going around Vrindavan performing madhukari. Madhukari means like a bee, where you collect a little bit from each and every house. You ask for one japati, not 10 japatis and 3 pizza pies or something like that. But just like one japati from each house, and then you go to the next house and get another japati. So she became very, very weak, physically exhausted, but she would still rise every day and sleep on the banks of the Jamuna. Remember, she was accustomed to sleeping in a palace. So she would sleep on the banks of the Jamuna, cleanse the Lord's temple, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, circumambulate the holy places. Haridas Pandit's heart became softened. Then he said, all right, I'll give you initiation. Whew. Finally gave her initiation. And then also he assigned one disciple named Lakshmi Priya to stay with her. And they stayed on the banks of Radha Kunds. And every day she and Lakshmi Priya would circumambulate Govardhan Hill. Then Sachi Devi, that's Gangamata Goswami, he went back to Jagannath Puri and lived in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's old house. That is a very important place. And she worshipped the Shalagram Shila, which is called Damodar, which Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya himself was worshipping. In other words, as a lady, she was worshipping the Shalagram Shila. So there's actually history of ladies doing things like becoming gurus, like she's a guru too. So she began to teach Srimad Bhagavatam class. The king came to hear her Bhagavatam class. His name was Mukunda Dev. And anyway, to make a long story short, because we only have a minute, she wanted to take a bath in the Ganges on the Snan day, the special day. But she didn't want to leave Jagannath Puri. So what happened is that the Ganges overflooded and washed her. You know, she just like was swept in the waves. And she was taken to the middle of the temple of Lord Jagannath, and everyone woke up the next morning, thought she was a thief, imprisoned her, and the king had a dream the next night, and he saw Lord Jagannath. Jagannath was angry with him, and he said, like, release her. If you want your life to be auspicious, she's my great devotee, you should take initiation from her. So the king actually took initiation from her. She initiated him the next day into the 18-syllable Radha Krishna mantra. And so in this way, she actually became a great spiritual master in our disciplic succession, initiated many great pundits and personalities who carried forth our disciplic succession. And she was called Ganga Mata Goswamini because the Ganges itself came and washed her into the temple of Lord Jagannath. Okay. That's all we have time for today. All those who are divine.